I am joined on the line by James DeBasio, whose new book, Gaijin Cowgirl, is out now through Crime Wave Press. James, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Stuart. Thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Oh, it must be nice to be in Hong Kong today, all that lovely autumn weather.
Yeah, we've had a nice run, but don't worry, the pollution will be back.
I was more thinking of filthy great typhoons maybe coming past you. But
I hope we're done with that.
Yes, I hope so too. But speaking of filthy great typhoons, Gaijin Cowgirl is an absolute typhoon of a book. It just sort of slammed into me and left me going, wow, where did that come from? Is there any more? How did you come to write Gaijin Cowgirl?
It's been a long process. The original draft is actually quite old, and it reflects when I arrived in Asia in the late 90s. I got here in early 1997 and spent a lot of time traveling around for work and just was completely absorbed in the region. I was traveling a lot. I was reading a lot. I was just trying to learn and be a sponge and soak up as much as I could. And everything was interesting. And it still is. I love being in the region. And it just was... It was just the adventure story that I couldn't believe that nobody else had written yet. So I felt like I better get this one in before somebody else does.
Was it hard work? Because you said that the draft's been kicking around for a while. Was it because of hard to write or hard to find a publisher?
Hard to find a publisher. Although, in retrospect, it went through a number of tweaks in a fallow period between writing the original and then finding a publisher. So it's probably for the best that it had to sit and stew a little bit. That meant I had time to really, as a slightly perhaps a more mature person, go back and amend a few things before it finally found a home.
Mm. The introduction of Crime Wave Press for Asian crime fiction must have been an absolute godsend for you then.
It made my life a lot easier. It was fortuitous. I just found them online, and as soon as they saw the manuscript, they were very interested, and it went very fast. They're not like traditional publishers. They move very quickly. And I have a nonfiction book out with a very traditional publisher, and they're very good at what they do, but Crime Wave Press just moves with a certain speed, which was nice. After you've been waiting around for so long, it's nice to see somebody who just wants to get your book out.
Now, Gaijin Cowgirls, for those of us who have read it, we know what it's about, but perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the background to Gaijin Cowgirl and how you created this character of Val.
Okay, the story in a nutshell is Val Benson is a young American woman working as a hostess in an upscale Tokyo nightclub. For Westerners who don't know Asia, these are often associated with business outings by salarymen and others, and you see them around Asia, but Japan is, I guess, sort of ground zero for some of this stuff. And it's a very different way. It's a different, totally different culture of doing business and of socializing between the genders. It's an interesting thing. So when you are new to the region, you're like, what is this going on? So it made for an interesting setting. So Val is working, and her number one client is a wealthy old man with some sinister hobbies and a map to stolen treasure that dates back to the World War II era. And so then throw in some dirty CIA agents and a couple of Yakuza and a kickboxer and a few more hostesses, and you're on your way.
Now, it goes all the way across Asia. It starts off in Tokyo, ends up everywhere. Does this sort of map out kind of what you did in your career in Asia?
Well, I'm a journalist by day, and I guess now I'm more of an editor than a reporter. But I travel a lot across the region, and in those days, in the 90s and early 2000s, I did extensive travel, really from Tokyo to Beijing to Mumbai, and all points in between. So it was just reflected the places that I found the most interesting or the most fun to be in. So Japan and Thailand are still to this day two places that I really love to visit and are endlessly interesting for me. And it was a pleasure to spend time in my imagination in these places with assorted interesting characters and both virtuous and dodgy, although I'd have to say there's a little bit a lack of virtue in the character of Gaijin Cowgirl. Even Val, who is the protagonist, is more of an anti-hero than a hero.
Yes, I was just sort of thinking that when you mentioned the word virtue or something, I don't remember anything like that in this book. Are you sure you've got the same book in mind? Yes. So, you said you're a journalist, but an editor by day, but what led you into writing? What was the draw for writing for you?
I don't know. I've been a writer since I was a kid. So it's just something that you're drawn to. Same reason people like to play sports or do any other sort of creative pursuit or something that they're drawn to. It mixes discipline with creativity and allows you to stamp yourself on something and share it. So I couldn't say. It's just something I've always done, and it just took a while to become old enough and mature enough to be able to create a consistent set of work.
Your other book on Angkor is out as well. I mean, that is a fascinating subject, and it's a really beautiful book. How did you come to put that one together?
That was an accident. I was visiting Angkor. I had been there a few times. I was there with my wife and some friends, and I had, in my hubris, agreed to play tour guide, and I thought I'd put a few notes together. I'm a history buff, and so I had a few books from previous visits and so on, and I thought it'd be quite easy, and that was clearly wrong. But I was in a fallow period with the creative writing as well, and the Angkor book just sort of turned into a project. I didn't realize I was writing a book when I last visited, but I was assembling these notes, and I just, you know, when you really get into a subject, you it's very humbling because you realize how little you actually do know and how much you would like to know. So you open one door and you enter a chamber, and instead of finding an answer, you find just a whole more bunch of doors. So even now, I still am learning new things about that story every day. But essentially, it was about the people who created the Angkor civilization and the monuments that we as visitors like to go see. If you go there and you buy some of the books that are available around, they're either very weighty academic tomes or they're just guidebooks that are not that knowledgeable. So I wanted to fill the vacuum with something that's slim, easily portable, gives you really the story, the stuff that you really want to know, and puts in the context of the monuments themselves, not in some stratospheric academia.
Yeah, I remember many moons ago studying the Angkor Wat temples as part of art history and thinking, my God, you've sucked the soul out of this.
Yeah, it does. A lot of those books really do take the soul out of it. Mm. So I was hoping to provide a service, really, to put some of that soul back in and give people a little bit sense of the wonder that comes with visiting the temples, but put it in some sort of context so they can actually understand. And it's quite interesting because the scholarship around that is changing very rapidly. So what we think we know about Angkor is actually moving very quickly. So that was a challenge because it's still a moving target, but it was fun.
Speaking of moving targets, is it hard to make the switch between writing nonfiction in your day job, journalism, the Angkor book, and writing fiction in your spare time?
I think the lesson I learned early on was don't be a journalist when you're trying to write fiction. It's easy to think, oh, I want to get this exactly right, the verisimilitude that you're aiming for, the accuracy that you're trained to seek when you're a journalist, makes for really, really boring writing as a fiction writer. And you realize that you're jamming in all this stuff, and nobody cares. You're just getting in the way. So you have to unlearn all that, and then just let your imagination flow and stick to what makes, you know, the elements of storytelling rather than reportage. It's a very important difference.
Mm. So what led you to Asia in the first place? It must be nearly, or going on for getting close to 20 years you've been in Asia now.
Well, I guess it's about 17. It'll be 17 at the end of this year. But it was a job offer. I was working as a cub reporter at a financial group in New York City, which was great. I loved it. But they had an office in Hong Kong, and I had already studied in Europe and wanted to go back overseas. And so I just put my hand up. I thought it'd be, you know, a 2-year stint in a region where I really knew, in which I knew nothing about, and I just ended up staying. So that was a long time. So I switched jobs and got married, and all lots of other nice things happened. And of course, the region's been great, a great canvas for a writer. So there's just, you know, so much variety here, and so such a rich, complex set of cultures that it's pretty hard not to enjoy it. And the food's good.
Yeah, oh yes, the food is good. I am walking testament to the fact that the food is good around here. Yeah, but you've been in Hong Kong or in and around Asia for 17 years. You've seen a lot of transitions. Is there a single moment you can point to and say, look, in the recent time period that I've been here, this is the biggest change I've seen?
Well, being based in Hong Kong, it's a very narrow viewpoint, is that when I the handover from British colonial outpost to, I guess, effectively mainland Chinese colonial outpost has been that the attitude between the people of Hong Kong and mainland Chinese, the way they view mainland Chinese, has had to change a lot, because when I first arrived, it was quite common to hear people refer to mainlanders as, you know, basically sort of peasants. And now, of course, the mainland drives a lot of what happens here. They have a lot of money, and they fuel the economy here. They fuel the property bubble and so on. So there's still a lot of animosity, but the mental shift has been profound, in which there's a sense that these aren't actually unsophisticated peons. These are people that we need to take seriously and respect. So I think that's been a change. And in the region in general, I've been through a lot of economic cycles here. So I think in general, what I really like about the region is the sense of aspiration, the optimism that you get in many places. What I dislike about it is the xenophobia that can come with that. As people get richer, they tend to get a little more cocky or complacent. So those are the things that you have to look out against. But overall, it's been a really fantastic experience living here, and I look forward to keeping on doing that.
Well, I hope you do, because I can't see why you wouldn't. Your wife's from Hong Kong, your father-in-law sings Chinese opera. It all sounds pretty amazing, actually.
I can't complain. And Hong Kong's a great town, right? I mean, I came here from New York, and what can I say? It's fast-paced. The buildings are tall. The elbows are sharp. The taxi drivers don't really speak English. It's just like New York City.
I was just thinking about that. So what's next for you? You've got this book on Angkor out. You've got Gaijin Kaugar out. You're editing. But what are you doing? Are you writing anything else at the moment?
Yes, I mean, the Angkor book was an interesting sidetrack for me, and I might do more in that mode down the pike. But I'd say the fiction writing is what really I enjoy the most, and it's also probably the most challenging. Writing fiction is way harder than writing nonfiction is my conclusion so far. Even though the nonfiction, you can get things wrong a lot more easily. Because you really are out of your depth as an amateur, but the act of writing fiction, the focus, the emotional intensity that you have to bring to that over a period of time, and just getting people to believe you, getting a reader to hook them in and keep them on that ride, that's much more difficult. So and challenging, and so I do have more of that in the pipeline. I'm hopefully putting the finishing touches on another thriller, and have also begun sketching out what I'm going to do with Val Benson. She will be back, but it's going to take me a little while to get her on page in a draft form.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that Val will be back, because I'm thinking, oh, you can't leave it one book. There's got to be more books for Val.
She's a good character. It's interesting. I've had a mixed reaction on her because she is such a shallow, selfish person who then has to go through this terrible situation and find something, some sort of courage and intelligence that's inside of her. Some people didn't like her, and then other people really related to her. I had a real mixed bag on that one, which is very interesting. So I think that tells me that there was something real about her, just like some people aren't your cup of tea, but other people love them. I think that made Val much more human. She wasn't Supergirl. Nor was she some clever dolly drifting around. I mean, she you know, I think she had some flesh and blood in her.
Now, James, if people want to find out more about you or the Anchor book or Gaijin Kaogo or what you're thinking, I understand there's somewhere we can go along and visit.
I have a blog. It's called Asia Hacks, asiahacks.com. It's a WordPress site, so there's no www. And I just put up some occasional musings there, a variety of whatever's on my mind. I'm not very good at being a regular blogger. I'm pretty busy, but I do try to keep it up as best I can. So there's some stuff about the books. Of course, Crime Wave Press has its website, and they have my stuff, and they have a few other of their writers on there, and some of those other books I've read, and they're good. And the Angkor book is published by Silkworm Books, which is based in Chiang Mai.
Well, James, it's been absolutely lovely talking to you this morning about Gaijin Kaogo, and I really look forward to catching up with you for whatever project comes out next, but thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for your interest in Gaijin Kaogo, Stuart, and I appreciate your arranging the interview.